Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Claire Lower, the Senior Food Editor for Lifehacker.com. Claire lives in Portland, Oregon, and she has a BS in chemistry from the University of Florida, which she says she almost never uses. She was working as a lab technician at a big engineering firm when she started blogging for ExoJane as a hobby. Hey, Claire, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Things are a little dire in Portland right now, but personally, I'm fine.
Well, we hope to take your mind off of the air quality and share some of your excitement for some of your tools.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, Claire, I am a huge fan of the work you do on Lifehacker. Your food posts are things I've featured at least a couple of times on my newsletter and in Boing Boing because you have clever, unanticipated uses for technology to prepare dishes and things like that. So really looking forward to this episode with you. Why don't you start by telling us about a fish spatula, what it looks like, what you use it for, all that good kind of stuff.
Yeah, so a fish spatula is kind of like, it has a shorter handle than most spatulas. It's almost all, I guess, blade you would call it, or, you know, the actual spatula part. It's very thin. It has really lovely slots. Which just means like when you're picking something up out of the pan, like if there's any grease, it just like it falls away wonderfully. But like, I almost feel like it should be called like a fish and meat spatula because yeah, it's very good for like getting delicate fish out of a pan. But it's also great. Like if you have a steak or a burger or something that's stuck, that really thin edge, just it separates everything like a dream without ruining the crust. Which is like the whole point of searing something is you want to get that crust. And so like if you have this sort of like large clunky spatula with a thick edge, you end up wrecking the crust. And I just like getting a fish spatula for me, honestly, it changed things in a way that I wasn't expecting. I love it.
And are there better fish spatulas than others? Is there a particular brand or style that you love and would recommend?
I mean, I just got mine. I think it was on sale at Sur La Table. Like, it was like the beginning of quarantine, and I just wanted to feel something. So I bought a bunch of stuff on Sur La Table at sale, including a meat grinder, which is also, I love that thing too. Ooh. And like this little, it's a coffee mug that's shaped like a cabbage, and I treasure that as well. But yeah, it was just like the Sur La Table brand.
So on Amazon, cheap ones seem to start around $10.
Yeah.
Then there's an OXO one for $12. And is that about what we're talking about?
Yeah, I wouldn't pay more than like $15 for one. Yeah, there's no need to get like super precious with it. You just want one that has like a nice thin, like kind of not super flexible, but you don't want it to be like you want it to have a little bit of give. Yeah, but you could probably find one at a restaurant supply store for even cheaper. I'm a big fan of restaurant supply stores.
And these are metal, right? They're not like silicone? Okay.
Yeah, they're metal, so they're not good for nonstick pans. But, you know, you don't really need one for a nonstick pan because things don't stick to nonstick pans.
Mm-hmm. And they seem to have a slight curve, a slight sway. And they're not perfectly flat. The ones I'm looking at seem to have a little bit of a sway in it.
Yes, that's a very good point. It does have that kind of like little angled, the first part of it is slightly angled for like, I don't know, half an inch or a centimeter, depending on the size of the spatula. You can get like really big ones. I have like technically a medium size one. And that kind of helps you like get in there, you know, like it helps you like just get in there right there at the angle that you need to really get stuff off the pan. Yeah, I love it. And it's great again for like anything fried or greasy. You can just you don't bring all that oil with you because the slots are so big.
Cool. And the kind of pan that you use, do you use like cast iron? Is that your typical thing or steel? Or tell me about the pan you
cook. I like an all clad. I mean, I have a cast iron, but I like my all clad. I don't even know. I feel like this all clad pan was just something that I took from my ex-husband when we got divorced. I don't even know who bought it. I think it might have been like his when I moved in with him when I was like 20, and then it just moved with us, and then I took it.
Excellent.
Because he never used it.
All clad is like the kind of thing that is like aluminum. Tell me what all clad is. I don't know.
And you know what I'm saying? It's all clad. Like I said, this pan, I'm not even sure where it came from. Let's see. It's like it's bonded.
It's a brand. All clad is a brand.
Yeah. So this is not an all clad brand. I just said that because it's a stainless steel that looks like an all clad brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a damn chef made. So it's cheap.
Okay. But it's the idea of like Cuisinart, I just looked up. It's a core of aluminum and then a stainless exterior.
Yes. So
that's the kind you use.
That's what I have.
Okay, cool. And so the reason you like this, besides that you inherited it, is that it has good like heat distribution?
Yeah, it's just like super even. It heats up well. It retains heat well. It's nonstick enough, if that makes any sense. Like, it... stuff will stick, but usually the stuff that sticks is stuff that I try to flip before a crust is formed. Like with a steak, if you leave it alone for long enough, it'll form that crust and you'll be able to remove it pretty easily. You run into trouble where you try to flip it too early.
Interesting. So you need to let it kind of carbonize a little bit or something and not get that gooey, sticky stuff.
Let it finish the process of forming a crust before you try to flip it. And also, like, I guess the only thing I don't use this pan for is eggs.
Why is that?
I just prefer a nonstick for eggs because I don't want to take any chances. I get very...
taking chances in terms of...
of them getting stuck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because eggs are
notorious for sticking. Yeah.
Eggs get stuck. Yeah. More easily than anything else. Yeah. But for everything else, I use this stainless steel pan that I stole from my ex-husband and it works great.
Cool. All right. So, tell us about your next tool, which is a, thermometer. It sounds like a fancy one.
Oh yeah. So the iGrill, I think it's the mini one I have. It's supposed to be used on a grill. So like you're grilling a brisket or I don't grill a lot. I don't have a grill. I'm in a 600 square foot apartment, but, you know, it's supposed to be so you can monitor the temperature of your meat on a grill without having to open the grill, and it's great. But I use it primarily for like chicken and turkey because it sends the temperature directly to your phone, and it'll even like beep when you're within 10 degrees of your final temperature. It's amazing because you don't have to deal with opening the oven and like, you know, trying to stick a probe into a hot chicken is not my favorite.
No, not when
so this hot. This thing, the thermometer itself is just a little probe, and it has a cable that goes to and does the cable and all that stay inside the oven? Or does the cable come outside the oven?
The cable runs from inside the oven to outside where the little Bluetooth transmitter is.
Okay.
And the Bluetooth transmitter is magnetic, which is awesome because you can stick it right on the oven.
All right. So you have a little tiny stainless steel probe which goes into the meat, and then this cable runs out to the side of your grill where this magnetic Bluetooth thing is, which is sending you the signal to your phone.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this idea that you could set like, well, when it reaches a certain temperature, it'll buzz me. Is that the idea?
Yeah, exactly. So like, say you want to cook something to 160 degrees Fahrenheit, it'll start beeping you actually at 150, like get ready. We're almost there. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you want to like pull it out and just let it kind of get hot to the core.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah. It's great. I love that thing. The only thing about it is you have to remember to turn it off because otherwise you'll drain the battery. And then like, it'll be Thanksgiving, you'll be like, great, time to cook this turkey. And then you're like, oh, I'm out of battery. And then you have to go to 7-Eleven. It's right. A whole thing.
And it's like, yeah, it's a CR2 battery. It's not like a typical battery.
Yeah.
So is this called the iGrill 3? Is that what we're talking about?
I think mine is the iGrill Mini.
And you know what the difference between a Mini and a 3 might be?
I think price point.
I see.
Yeah, the price. And I think the Mini is $50. Mm-hmm. The iGrill 3 has two probes that can be used simultaneously. So if you're cooking two different dishes at the same time. So it's a fancier deal. How's the Bluetooth range on it? Can you wander all over your house or do you have to kind of keep your phone within 30 feet of the oven or grill?
I mean, I only have a 600 square foot apartment and it's worked throughout the entire apartment. Mm-hmm. And I think when I used it at my boyfriend's house, which is a house, it's bigger, I was able to wander around without it like dropping or losing connection. I mean, mm-hmm. I wouldn't leave the house or anything.
Yeah.
But you should be fine.
Cool. That sounds like a very useful thing to have, especially with the holidays coming up.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, let's move on to your next one, the Le Edge Exfoliator, which is not a cooking tool.
It's not a cooking tool. And I was trying to keep things interesting, not doing all cooking stuff.
Yeah.
So this thing's kind of gross, but I'm obsessed with it. It's like, it has a plastic handle and it's kind of curved. And then on the end, it just has this sort of, it's like a stainless steel blade. It's not super sharp, but it is, you basically scrape your face with it and it pulls up all this disgusting gunk. And also like if you wear makeup or put any products on your face at all, like stuff accumulates and it just, it's like a Roman, the Romans used to scrape their bodies with pieces of broken pottery. Mm-hmm. Like they would rub oil. They would rub oil on themselves. I think it's called a stigil. Yeah, they would rub oil on themselves because like, you know, like dissolves like. So to dissolve all the grime. And then they would just scrape it off with pottery. And it's not exactly like that, but it's similar. Like,
interesting. So you use an oil with this. You don't just do a dry scrape.
Sometimes. Sometimes I do. Usually my face is oily enough. I provide my own oil.
Join the club, yeah.
Very oily skin. And the benefit of scraping off your dead skin is what?
Oh, it makes my complexion, I think, a little brighter. But also then, like, when I do wash my face with a cleanser, it's actually, like, washing my skin. And it's less for the cleanser to have to work against. And also, I think it's just, like, psychological. Like,
Does it feel good?
It feels good to me. But I've been told that I like exfoliation too much.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever like been too aggressive with it and like gotten a rash or anything, or is that?
No, but I have almost pulled out my nose ring.
Ooh, which, so you have to be careful about piercings and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
when I first got my nose pierced, I mean, I almost pulled this thing out. Like, it was just constant for a while because it was a new thing in my face. And my nose isn't small. Like it was, it was sticking out there. But it's fine now. I've adapted. But no, I've never had any issues with a rash or anything. But I do, everybody's skin is different. So I would say if you buy this, if you have like kind of very delicate, fragile skin, or I would do like a little test spot before doing your entire face.
Do you have to replace the blade or is it one blade for life?
No, I've had this thing for, since I lived in Florida, and even before that, I've had this thing, I think, for like 10 years.
Cool.
There's really no moving parts, right?
Right.
Just this kind of like a solid piece of broken pottery.
Yeah, except for it's stainless steel and it's very easy to clean, like, and sterilize, which is important. Like, I remember I first wrote about it for XO Jane and someone was like, you could just use an old credit card. I was like, you should definitely not rub an old credit card across your face. Like, plastic gets like all these little nicks that bacteria can just like burrow in. It's the worst idea. Don't do that.
That's really interesting. Okay, so you have the stainless steel. That seems like
I love stainless steel, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I'm looking at the price on Amazon. It's like $40. Is that right? Too much?
That is more than what I paid for it. To be fair, I've had this thing for at least a decade.
Well, it probably wasn't $40 a decade ago, so.
Yeah, it was probably, I think I remember it being like 20. I don't know. I do love it. And I other people who bought it on this recommendation say they also love it. And it's people with like oily skin that tends to clog.
So it seems to have, it's basically a kind of a wedge shaped piece of stainless steel with like a rubber grip on top though. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's a little bit, it's more than just a piece of metal from the workshop. It's has a kind of a grip.
Yeah.
On it that could be helpful too.
And you know, you can use it on your entire body. I found it to be most effective on the face for full body exfoliation. I use this thing. It's like this little mitt that I got at a Korean spa. That just like you rub it on, you soak yourself in hot water for like 20 minutes and then you rub yourself with this little mitt and dead skin just, it's disgusting, but very satisfying. Dead skin just like rolls off of you.
Wow. That sounds amazing. I was like, it's beyond loofah.
Yeah. Oh, the loofah is such a weak well, the example.
Next for wimps.
The next step up is the Scotch-Brite.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, you can use in a workshop to polish steel. I mean, it's Scotch-Brite will actually scratch steel. It's very, very hard.
Maybe that's what's next for me. I'm always trying to get rid of my skin, apparently.
Okay, and your fourth tool is an electric waffle iron.
Yeah.
So, waffle irons. Why electric and why a waffle?
Well, so I have, I think it's the Cuisinart. It was like $20. It's like a nonstick plug-in waffle iron. I just like it because it's pretty easy to clean. It was cheap. It's kind of like, it's basically like a little George Foreman grill almost, except for it's waffle shaped instead of grill lines. You get like all these little pockets of crispiness.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it does look like a Foreman grill.
Yeah, it's kind of, you can use it. I've used it to grill. I mean, it's not technically grilling, but to grill peaches. And I did radicchio recently. It heats up so quickly, and it's easy to clean because it's nonstick. You just kind of wipe it off, or like if something's really gunky, you can wet a paper towel or get in there with Q-tips. I think I've made actual waffles on it once.
So we have an ancient electric waffle that I used when the kids were growing up, and it looks more like the Black & Decker, I think, one that is currently for sale. It's very, very simple, and we've only ever used it for waffles. Would that work for, I mean, can we just use any electric waffle and cook stuff in it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with an older one is sometimes like the Teflon or whatever nonstick coating can kind of chip away. So I would just check that to make sure that the coating is still good. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be the brand that I use. It could be like any sort of plug-in nonstick waffle iron. And if it's a little sticky, you can always use, you know, spray to keep things from sticking.
So it's like a kind of any kind of a press. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it has these waffling pattern. And the advantage of that is that, I understand, I guess it increases the surface area.
Yeah.
So it makes everything crispier.
Yeah. And it's also just fun. it's just kind of fun that something that is not a waffle is now taken on the characteristics of a waffle. And like, it's good. Those little pockets are good for picking up sauce or syrup or whatever, you know, it's like a nice little cup to hold whatever liquid you've applied to your waffle or not waffle.
Right. I guess like a panini is just a waffle with just one dimension instead of having two.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can kind of do panini things.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think you mentioned this one of you mentioned this before, the waffled tofu. I'm not a big tofu person, but like, I do like, there is one more step for the tofu, which is the hot water soak, where you put, you take some salted water, bring it to a boil, slide the tofu in and let it sit, take it off the heat, let it sit for like 15, 20 minutes. Then I pat it off and waffle it. And it's just the combination, you get like a nice, firm, crispy, seasoned piece of tofu.
That's so cool. So that's interesting. And that was something that I didn't see in your post, like how long you soak the tofu. So 15 minutes in salt, in a hot salt water bath.
Yeah, I think I linked to another post about prepping tofu that like goes into that a little
you
more.
You did.
Yeah.
And you starting with this really soft stuff or the firm?
The firm.
And so the salt water is going to like through osmotic balance, draw the water out of the tofu.
Right. Yeah. It firms it up a little more and it also seasons it.
That's so cool. What I do a lot is just freeze tofu. And then when it thaws, you can almost like wring it out like a sponge.
Oh,
have
yeah.
You tried that?
That works too. Yeah.
Yeah. But then that takes time. This salt water one looks good.
It's and real quick.
I saw your waffle iron recipe. And so I just tried it with an actual George Foreman grill.
Oh.
And I just brushed it with a little olive oil and put some paprika and salt on it, I think. And it was amazing. It was so good. And the kids loved it. And I did like two full bricks of tofu and, you know, a family of four, we ate it all. It was
That's
really
great.
Good. Yeah.
I love it when kids love things that I like recipes or techniques that I've written about because like kids are picky. I'm always trying to impress children.
Yeah. Well, my kids are like pretty old, but they are picky eaters anyway. And
oh,
so,
really?
But it worked.
Good.
So, yeah. Claire, we'd like to hear about if you're working on a project right now or you have something that you want to share with our audience, this is the time to do it. What are you excited about these days?
What am I excited about these days? I mean, Lifehacker is, you know, that's kind of, I'm in an interesting position where the thing that was my hobby, that was like my side project became my full-time job. So mm-hmm. I really just, I love writing for Lifehacker and I love running Skillet. Like I even enjoy the commenters there. It's really rare on the internet to have, you know, a place where the comment section isn't a complete garbage fire. And like, I really like the community of Lifehacker. Yeah, I don't really have.
How many posts do you do a day or a week, or how does that work for you?
I usually do two a day.
Okay, and are these things that you're coming up with, or does your community, are they kind of pitching or suggesting things to you, and you're kind of following up and doing some research? How does that work?
I would say I come up with probably like 98% of the ideas.
Okay.
And then I have one freelancer, who does a couple things for me each month, and then like a couple other freelancers here and there. And sometimes like if there's a really good suggestion in the comments or people will email me, I'll write about those things. And every once in a while, like one of my editors will drop in something like, hey, you should write about this, or something will come about organically from a discussion we have in Slack.
Right. And are you just mostly doing reporting, or were you actually trudge out to the kitchen and start to try things?
Oh, I'm in the kitchen a fair amount. Yeah. Not as much as I would like to be. The other thing that like I guess I'm passionate about is I'm really into union organizing. We're we're unionized with the Writers Guild. And you know, I try to do work through them, not just at the geo media sites, but across the industry to like make working conditions better for all writers who write online.
And so how does the union work for Lifehacker? Does that mean that there's a minimum wage or what does that actually mean for you in terms of?
I mean, for me, it's great. Like our contract, I helped negotiate the last contract. It's really awesome. We have salary minimums for each position. Which, I mean, and we're a fairly young industry to be unionized. We Gawker, RIP, was the first union of its kind 5 years ago. So yeah, we have salary minimums, we have paid time off, we have healthcare, you know, like just things that I had never had before as a writer online, as a blogger. Mm-hmm. And you know, it makes, I think it when you have people who are like happy and their basic needs are being met, their work is better.
Yeah, absolutely. How many people are in the Writers Union?
Oh, the Writers Guild. So we're Writers Guild of America East. I don't have an exact number. It's a lot because it's like screenwriters also.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, but because we're based in New York, we're organized with the WGA East. So yeah, I don't have that. I think it's, you know.
Well, and how many people at Lifehacker these days?
It's somewhere between 11 and 14. I should know right off the top of, I think it's 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
11, and it's distributed. You don't have like an office anywhere?
There is an office in New York. No one is currently going into it because of COVID. But yeah. I've never been someone who worked at the New York office. I'm always in Oregon.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
It's crazy that there is an office. Like, it's, to me, it just seems like a waste of money. Like, Cool Tools doesn't have an office. Boing Boing's never had an office.
Right.
Why do you need one?
Yeah. Cool Tools never had an office.
Cool Tools never had an office. Well, I guess for like some video people, it's nice. But I don't know. I mean, it's good that I don't work in an office because I have to be able to bop into the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great. So are you at all tempted by video, or is Lifehacker doing more and more video? Is that something on your horizon? And where does that fit into things?
I've done a lot of video. Right now, our video department, we've gone through some structural changes. So there are some challenges there. But I've been recording a couple videos during quarantine from my home, just like on my computer, which have been kind of fun. But before that, I want to say doing like 8 videos a year. And they're kind of like fun little instructional pieces.
And can people find those at skillet.lifehacker.com?
Yeah, the videos are there. Lifehacker has a whole video subsection where you can see all our videos. They're also on YouTube.
Okay, at the Lifehacker channel.
Yeah.
And if people want to find more about you or follow you, you've got Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, I'm pretty much just Twitter, Instagram, and then on Lifehacker at Skillet. Like those are the easiest ways to, I guess, follow me if you dare.
Okay.
Each platform has a slightly different emphasis. If you want to like see me shouting about labor issues and union stuff, Twitter is where you should follow me.
That sounds good.
And
I
if
like
we
that.
Want to see you in your kitchen trying something that may not work, where do we go?
I mean, I guess Instagram is the best. I used to do more little individual videos from my Instagram about food. But honestly, I haven't been recently because I've been kind of tired. But Instagram's probably the most chaotic follow, honestly. It's all over the place. There isn't a theme there besides
Well, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
Well,
we will have links to all of your social media, and we'll have links to the tools you talked about and links to your Lifehacker sub channel. Claire, this has been a blast talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to share all this great stuff with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey, everybody, it's your co-host, Mark, and I wanted to let you know that we have a lot more going on here in Cool Tools than just this podcast. We have our flagship website where we review a new tool every day. That's at cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters. We have this podcast. We have a YouTube channel where we review tools. And if you like what you hear and see and read, the best way to help us out is by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/cooltools and donate at any level you wish. You can even contribute $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that you give us will go towards paying for our transcribing costs, editing videos, and editing the podcast. It goes towards paying contributors who write the reviews for us. It goes towards our equipment costs, our hosting costs, and it supports our very small company of three people. This week, I wanted to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters who have been giving us at least $2 a month. And if you give us $2 a month, we'll give you a shout out online. And this week, I would like to thank Michael Sacochia, Molly Starr, M. Velderman, Opposable Thumbs, Pamela Cooley, Patrick Weyer, Paul Hosey, Randy Fisher, Stuart Burroughs Brand, Synaptic Sam, Therese Schwartz, Tom Hawkins, Tom Markham, What Bear, Javier Pangolin, David Lang, Eric Byers, Sean Hartley, Stephen Powell, Greg Lichtscheidt, John Hobson, Adam Bristol, Adam Naher, Anonymous, Bill Kempthorne, Bruce I. Niles, Chris Woodruff, C. Kolos, Daryl Flynn, Egg Fleegoff, Eric Hanschrau, Eric Hoover, Godfrey Saldana, Jay Skiles, John M. Larson, Jude Galligan, Kenneth Gilman, and Lucas Frank. Thank you very much for supporting the show, and we will see you next week.